Hi, this is Amit.
And this is Akhila. Welcome to the Indian Music Charts Podcast.
This is a show where we look at the weekly music charts on Spotify and make it our springboard for a larger discussion about the music industry.
We discuss listener trends, what it says about the industry and where it might be heading, and occasionally we'll also share our two cents.
New episodes drop every Tuesday, so don't forget to hit follow and the bell icon to be notified. Hi everyone, we're back after a mid-season break. On this week's episode, we're making a case for cross-border collaboration across the subcontinent. As always, the subject is inspired by a key movement of the chart. So without further ado, let's take a look at key movements on the survey published on the 20th of October 2020.
So this week's highest climber, climbing from 141 to number 30, is Khalasi from Coke Studio Bharat. This is a track by, it's officially the biggest track of the Navratri season. And if anyone can testify to it, it is me. This track plays minimum four times. And four times is like on an easy day. It's usually 6 to 8 times in an hour. But yeah, obviously like, it's gained quite a bit because of the festivities.
But you know what's amusing about this is that Coke Studio finally has a hit. You know,
but I will tell you this, by the way, and you can all go check this. When this track came out, I went and I commented on Achin's post saying this is going to be the track of the season. And that was, I think, whenever it came out, I don't know, May, June, or whenever it was. I just didn't know it'll take this long, but it is
well,
the track.
I mean, you
have
to wait for like Garba season, right?
So, yeah. But I will definitely say outside of Garba also, this is, at least in my opinion, the strongest track.
It is. I mean, you know, after the first couple of tracks, I kind of paying that much attention because I really wasn't feeling this. But then after this song, I saw it sort of like has been doing pretty well. And I went and checked it out and I was like, wow, this is actually not too bad. I mean, I can even like hear this apart from like, you know, hearing it, like being forced to hear it.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is, you don't have to be a Gujarati music listener to like this track. And I think that's one of the reasons why I like
it. And I think the arrangement is really nice. And if the song goes further up, we'll probably, you know, discuss it more in depth. But I saw the video and it's like almost like the super group of like indie music talent.
Yeah,
right?
It has some great talent.
Both the boys from the Light Years Explode. There's Arifa Ribello on drums. There's Rogue Vishwanath on like guitar. It's quite amazing. And Achint, of course, started out in the indie scene. So
no, I think I definitely want to keep looking at this track in the coming weeks and see how it sort of like trends after this festive season. But also, it is really picked up all over short format and not necessarily for Garba season. It's in like all sorts of like fashion videos, comedy videos. So let's see. Another big mover from number 70 to 27 is Lalkara by Diljit Dosanjh, Intense and Sultan. This is the breakout track from Diljit's new album Ghost. Badass from Leo is seeing a new peak. It's now at number 8. Last week it was at number 9. At number 1 is Chalea from Jawan, which is at number 1 for the 6th week in a row.
The one track you didn't mention, of course, is the one that has inspired this week's discussion. It's the highest new entry at number 4 all the way. And this is pretty unusual for a brand new act. It's by the Pakistani trio called Aur. That's A-U-R. And it's called Tu Hai Kaha. Now, technically, I think the reason why this song has debuted so high is because I think it's actually more of a re-entry. It actually entered the daily charts a couple of weeks ago and has been climbing pretty strongly. But the track was briefly taken down because it was originally released under the name Uran. Now, Uran is also the name of another Pakistani act, I think a popular rock band. I'm guessing something happened because the track disappeared and then it was came back onto the chart, but of course under a new band name, Aur. Now, A-U-R happens to stand for the band member's name. They are Ahad Khan, Usama Ali and Rafi Anwar, who seem to share writing, singing and producing duties. I don't know if you've seen the video, music video.
Oh, no, I haven't.
They look like children. I mean, they look really young.
I've seen the photo. I've seen the still. They do look quite youngins.
They look like teenagers. I mean, there's nothing about them on the internet. I mean, like, I tried to look for information on them, but I couldn't find anything. So they're obviously a pretty new act. Couldn't find anything about them. But this track, I mean, it's like, it's just that perfect storm of like hip-hop, pop, you know, and like sort of romantic lyrics, and it sort of checks all the boxes of what, like, I suppose Gen Z loves these days. But this song actually is like pretty lyrically quite heavy. You know, it's not just like nowadays when you have like a lot of songs where they just repeat like the chorus like 10 times and just have a couple of verses in between. This has got like a pretty like long, you know, verses. And the best comment that I've read in a long time on YouTube was for this video, where somebody wrote, "This song was not written by pen. It was written by pain."
Oh my God. Listen, I love that. Yeah. It's both funny and sad.
It is. And this is sad love, the number one genre, as we keep saying.
Of course.
So anyway, now, why are we talking about this track? It's because it just so happened that the same week that this track has been climbing up so highly, there was a recent Bombay High Court ruling where the High Court ruled against somebody who filed a plea to ban Pakistani artists from performing in India. And of course, I'm sure this case might be appealed. And, you know, as we know, there's been a unofficial ban, I think. Is it? I don't know if it's official or unofficial.
Yeah, it is unofficial, because every time they come down, there's just so much that happens, right? Like,
yeah. So there is, if you notice, no Bollywood, you know, soundtracks have featured Pakistani singers for many, many years now. No Pakistani actors have been acting in Bollywood films, even though they were fairly popular until a few years ago. Now what's happened is that with this ruling, I don't know whether things are going to change, but as we have mentioned many times on this show, at least when it comes to listening to the music, people don't really care whether a song is from Pakistan or wherever. They just love a good song. And we've seen that especially on Spotify in the last couple of years, and I think on other streaming platforms too, with songs like Pasuri from last year, which was one of the top tracks of the year. And, you know, this year, earlier with Kahani Suno by Kehri Khalil, both Pakistani artists doing really well in India. And that seems to be the case with this track too, which is basically the top five cities for Tu Hai Kahan, by the way, are Delhi, Mumbai, Lucknow, Pune, and ironically, Ahmedabad. And we'll come to why ironically Ahmedabad in a little bit. But that kind of shows you that sort of, you know, the biggest market sometimes for Pakistani artists is India. And, you know, the more, and you and I have discussed this, that, like, I think there's a huge loss, like a huge opportunity cost, you know, for not allowing our artists to perform there and their artists to perform here. Because, you know, we can dive more into this, but there's a huge sort of like economy around, like, you know, touring. And if our artists were allowed to perform there and their artists were allowed to perform here, we'd see a huge difference, right? Because there is, like, we've seen this, of course, when they perform in like the US or the UK or Dubai, for a fact, you know, which has almost become like this neutral territory. The biggest audiences for Pakistani artists, like whether it's your Ahad or Atif, Aslam, whenever they go and perform, is always Indians. So yeah, I mean, you know, I just wanted to ask you, what do you think that, like, I personally feel that I wish some economists out there had done some study of the billions of rupees that have been lost because of this sort of unofficial ban.
Oh yeah, like, I think amongst music economists, we only have one, I guess that's Will Page.
Will Page.
We definitely have a gap for someone in India. I'm looking at you, Amit, to do a PhD in economics, because you like data, you're good with numbers. You're like our shining hope. You know, you're right. There's definitely a business case for, you know, cross-border collaboration. And, you know, like, of course, we'll get to the live aspect of it, but this is full funnel, right? Like, everything from streaming till brands till partnerships and then eventually live, because live is always something that comes in a little later once, you know, it's higher overheads also. But, you know, I will say this, like, when I was working at Savin, we actually did do a launch in Pakistan, and in terms of number of downloads, it was number two in the country. And which also goes to show it's the other way around, right? Like, as much as, you know, Indians don't quite think about where is this music coming from, if they like the artist, they like the artist. Even audiences were not thinking about where is this music platform coming from, right? Number two is pretty big. And number one, by the way, was SoundCloud, which was there for a much longer time, right? And what also happens with these kind of bans is it starts affecting content availability. And this is not so much in terms of international DSPs, right? But with a lot of Indian DSPs, they have to be very careful about even the fact that some of these content are even available, right? Because without taking names, there were definitely Indian DSPs who did not promote Pasuri. And not because they didn't think it's a good track, but because they literally live in the fear of there could be a campaign against them, like against the brand, against individuals.
Yeah,
even against individuals, right? We've seen that happening. We've seen internet mobs going after execs on Twitter, saying, how are you doing this? You know, go uninstall their app. And the thing is, we know for a fact that streaming is not going to provide the amount of income, say, that comes from live. But it does something that's very fundamental, that is increase awareness for artists, right? And right now, the fact that we're talking about this artist is obviously like, you and I have never heard them live. No one has told us by word of mouth that I saw them here or I saw them there. It's simply by the fact that they are now charting that we know about them, right? So even those kind of cross-border collaborations, even like playlist properties that can actually help discovery across, you know, the South Asian borders, right? Like, we are all trying so hard to make our mark in the West when there is an ample audience over here. And the fact is, the audience over here is far more likely to consume the music that's made out of here, because A, the values of the audiences are similar, their wants and likes are very similar. Like, between India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, I think we see Sad Love almost everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Sri Lanka, I've not observed so much, but I would assume also the same case.
And Sri Lanka, maybe the language will be slightly different, but when it definitely comes to sort of India and Pakistan, like literally, like, you know, it's Urdu and Punjabi most of the time. And I was just thinking, if you close your eyes and somebody plays this track for you, like, would you really be able to tell that it's the song is from like Pakistan?
It's, or honestly, it's just India? Another brown person, you know?
Yeah.
Like singing in another brown person language. And that's why, like, without the context, the music obviously speaks for itself, right? And obviously, like, charts are borderless in that sense. But going back to what I was saying, however, in terms of revenue, it's like bottom of the totem pole, right? Mm-hmm. There's even opportunities for brand collaborations. Because, like, so Fawad Khan, I think his last movie was Kapoor and Sons. Mm-hmm. And this was a Dharma movie. And I remember he had actually come down to India and, like, you know, Savan had to do some, you know, shoot work with him. And there were also a lot of other Indian brands who got him on board as a brand ambassador.
Yeah.
Or as, you know, a part of the movie promotions, right? So there are a lot of co-marketing opportunities that brands do along with films. And that then goes into a revenue stream that's not even music. Like, sometimes it's selling tires, right? Sometimes it's selling jewelry. It's this is a trickle-down effect beyond music as well, right? That is lost because now, obviously, Fawad cannot come here. Similarly, other actors cannot come here, right? The live aspect of it, man. Now, that's... Dude, there are so many Aatif fans in this country, right? How many people want to watch Aatif Aslam live, right? And that's just talking about the mainstream.
They're going to Dubai to watch him. So we're giving money to Dubai.
We're giving money to Dubai. Exactly. Please, government, we will give you money. We will give you tax. Please just let Aatif come to India, okay? And see, again, you know what? This is, again, like, not even a government regulation. I think there are a lot of, like you said, even now, it's a very unsaid sort of a rule, right? Because there's such a big risk. If you as a promoter say that there is no restriction as such. Oh, but there is one restriction. You know, it takes about hour and a half, okay, to reach between India and Pakistan. But it takes 7 hours because there are no direct flights.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I had to check this out because I was just curious, like, a month and a half ago to see what the distance is. Because, like, I met a friend of mine who was telling me that, you know, she's, I think she's from Karachi or Islamabad. I don't remember. And I wanted to, and she's born over there and I work with her. And we're born pretty close to each other in terms of age. And I was just curious to see how far away we were when we were born. And then I realized that we might have been in kilometers not so far away, but if you have to reach each other at this point in time, it's not going to happen. Like, you have to go to Dubai, you have to take a transfer flight, right? So there's a cost aspect to it, which comes down to, as a promoter, say you decide that there's no written rule that you cannot bring Aatif down, or you cannot bring... By the way, so many indie artists from Pakistan are streamed here, right? Whether it's Kefi Khalil, like Hassan Rahim, so Talal Qureshi, right? Even if you get the smaller ones who are not going to really make the blinkers go for everyone, there's such a big risk that if, say, someone who's a right-wing supporter finds out, they could potentially start a ban campaign against you, your company, event could get cancelled. There are lots of challenges that one could anticipate. But hypothetically speaking, let's say a promoter does do this, okay, and bring down a couple of artists down to India. Your theories on what are the possible things that could go wrong?
Yeah, so like you said, I mean, I think there's always a risk, right? A huge risk factor. You know, in fact, this happened. I remember going for a concert to the NCPA, I think 2014, where this band called the Sachal Jazz Band was performing. And we were all there, literally at the venue. And the band apparently was on stage, but the doors didn't open.
Okay.
And so it seems that they were getting threats and from these political parties. And literally they call the show off there and then. While the band was on stage and the crowd was literally outside the doors.
Oh, wow.
And I was amongst the audience. So obviously, you know, if stuff like that is going to happen, you know,
and I don't even know how insurance works in a case like this.
Yeah, I don't know how insurance works.
I don't think this is an act of God. This is an act of human being, right?
Yeah. And so what, I mean, so obviously it's going to take a huge amount of risk, you know, like potential for somebody to take on that kind of, like, you know, somebody really brave to do that. So one of the ways to do it is through maybe a collaboration, right? Hip-hop artists are already doing it. We've talked about this before. Krishna's last EP, I mean, not the current one, but the one before that, was pretty much basically a collab EP with young Stunners, you know, the Pakistani rap duo. And so perhaps if they did a joint gig and, you know, young Stunners didn't get to be here, there'd be enough people who are ready to come for Krishna anyway. Or maybe get them programmed at a festival. I mean, if they don't show up, it'll be one more artist who couldn't make it on the bill, just like Canadian artists are being cancelled for this year's festival season. So maybe that's the way to start it out and to sort of take that risk and sort of say, hey, we're going to do this because legally there's no way you can stop us. But of course, you know, we know in this country, it's not necessary that the law is always what's followed, and you can't, you know, always guarantee
that. Real collaboration that is also required is a collaboration between the music industry and the government, you know. And here's the thing, okay, like a lot of other countries have these structures and these programs where, you know, the government does interact very consistently with its creative and culture industries. Yeah. And I'm not saying India is not trying it. I think there have been some efforts in the last year, at least, right? It's the first step. What is also sort of lacking, and maybe this kind of just will come down to who has the right connects, right, with the ruling parties or with, you know, the local authorities and can work with them. But ultimately, it also needs to be a big part of the government's agenda to foster collaborations, you know, within
the
region.
But it kind of puts, it's that also is like right now, I mean, what are diplomatic stances between, you know, India and Pakistan right now, right? I mean, so you may not necessarily have great relations politically, but you might have artistic. And the whole point of this, and I think that it's a court ruling, was that it's not a sign of patriotism. I mean, it's not like somebody like is, you can't stop, like, you know, this is not an equivalent of like showing, you know, like, that you are a great Indian by doing this, right? So I think just the fact that like culture has always, at least hopefully beyond politics, gone beyond politics, and culture has always been a way for people to bond across borders. And so it would perhaps require, I don't know, I mean, like I said, a great risk appetite and some kind of, you know, like we've had projects like this before, right? We had that...
I remember Euphoria collaborated with a Pakistani artist. They dropped that track around our Independence Day, both the countries, right?
Yeah, this was like, I think in the, you know, in the early 2000s, and there were things like these sort of peace projects that were sort of promoting, you know, between two countries, there was kind of like peace between India and Pakistan and these kind of things that really, you know, they were really heartening. But then again, I think even from the perspective of not only us wanting to bring them down, even the artists, you know, they might face a certain bit of reluctance to wanting to come here. Just, I think, you know, looking at the experiences of the cricket team, the Pakistani cricket team, you know, like I read recently, people said that religion was the, or did you say this to me? I can't remember. Cricket was supposed to be the religion of, cricket is supposed to be the religion of India, but what we're seeing nowadays is religion coming into cricket.
Yeah, no, I didn't say that, but I definitely feel that.
Yeah, and you know, you heard about instances of the Pakistani team being heckled. It's like so ridiculous. I mean, like, how is that? And, what is the connection?
And right? you know, like, by the way, so there was also follow-up, you know, tweets after the New Zealand game, okay?
Yeah.
Saying that, no one heckled the New Zealand players, so, you know, it's... the other team deserved it, and we as fans are, you know, not hecklers at all. And those people who are speaking against us, aka the secular people, the tweet literally went on to say that you love Pakistan, so, you know, basically, you know, the most common thing that you hear on Twitter, go to Pakistan.
I mean, and this is exactly the answer, right? So apparently, if you say anything but positive of Pakistan, you automatically hate India, which is the most, like, sort of,
you're speaking, and I went,
sort of have a logic like that.
I went to the High Court statement because I wanted to read it out. It essentially said that patriotism doesn't mean hostility to neighboring countries. Exactly. And that's really as simple as it gets. Like, you can 100% be a patriot if you care for the people of this country, right, for its future. But you also happen to like movies from another country. That doesn't make you any less. And forget Pakistan. Do we not watch K-drama? Okay. Did we all not watch Squid Games? Right. Does that make us not patriotic? Absolutely
not.
No,
but then, I'm going back to the start where I said the city that has the most listeners on Spotify for Tu Hai Kahan is Ahmedabad. And Ahmedabad is where that heckling happened, during the India-Pakistan match. And so, and it's a significant number of, like, listeners there. I don't remember the exact figure now, but it's in the tens of thousands. So, you know, that many people are listening to that music, even in your sort of like, you know, the stronghold of whatever, you know, our ruling party. So they're listening to Pakistani
music. That essentially
music.
Shows that there's unconscious bias. I mean, when you remove the context
mode, because if it was in private mode, then I guess do those streams not get tracked or something? I don't know. But it's kind of sad if somebody listening to Pakistani songs like in private mode. But
that would be hilarious. But that is also true, though. Like, I think there's a certain amount of like lack of accountability, right? People might assume that no one needs to know I'm listening to this, and they could very well externally even overcompensate for it. You know?
And this song, by the way, is number one on the daily viral songs chart, so it's obviously trending on Reels. So you're happy to bash, like, you know, Pakistani cricket players and sort of Pakistani people online, but you'll happily use this song in your Reels, like they did with Kahani Suno and Pasuri. I mean, it's just
and in fact, Pasuri had a remake in a Bollywood movie, right?
So how did that happen now? And how come there were no protests when that happened? You know,
on the contrary, again, I think
if I was like Pakistani, I would have protested about how horrible that remake was.
You know? You don't have to be Pakistani for that, because the Indians protested it, saying that why did you remake this? But no, I will say this though, right? Okay, the moral aspect of it aside, the, you know, somewhat nonsensical aspect of it aside, I keep going back to the business side of it, you know, just empirically looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what started our discussion, right? When we say the case for a cross-border collaboration, we're not even looking at it from like from a moral, ethical point of view, just from a pure business sense. And we know, forget cricket, forget Bollywood, forget religion. Number one religion in any country in this capitalist world is
money.
Paisa.
Yeah. And money is amazing, okay? Like, let's face it, we all need it, okay? We can act like we don't, but we do. And here's the thing, right? It's about, like, you don't want to limit opportunities for growth, right? whether it's audiences, whether it's money, whether it's travel opportunities, right? It's also the other way around, right? It's also like, yes, we like a lot of artists who are maybe from Pakistan or Bangladesh, even by the way, like, without again taking names, there was a Bangladeshi artist who I had to work with. And this guy, while checking into his hotel here in Bombay, he had like the weirdest experience because like, oh, we can't check you in. There's some issue with Bangladeshi passports, things like that. And again, that could have been like a hotel issue or like there was some confusion at the front desk level. But here's the thing, okay, this entire region is a subcontinent, right? And we all have such similar cultures. Like, these are not the things that need to be holding you back, right?
I mean, we were technically one, the same
we were,
country
exactly,
at
right?
some point in time. So.
And even think about Indian artists, right? Mm-hmm. Not every Indian artist can do a US tour, right? Mm-hmm. Not every Indian artist can even go to Dubai. It takes time, okay? The conversion is quite high. But imagine an Indian artist who can build a fan following of 10 million people and tour within this region, which is just India, Pakistan,
yeah.
Bangladesh,
and, yeah.
Nepal,
and
Sri Lanka.
Say this, I mean, I think we're also saying it's vice versa, right? How much is the Pakistani economy losing by not allowing Indian artists to come there? I mean, it works both ways. I mean, they
Listen,
also
in
are...
fact, okay, most of the weeks, the number one track on Spotify's Pakistani charts are always by an Indian artist.
Yeah, and the majority of the songs there, because we just have that much of a larger music industry, right? And yeah, so I mean, it really, it's not a one-way street. I mean, I think somebody should do a study in Pakistan about how much their economy has lost by not having Indian artists come over, you know, but it shouldn't be like, oh, they should vote first.
then, no, but that, again, you know, this is all going to go back to where the government's agenda sits at. But like, there does need to be active data that needs to be provided. And that's why what you're saying makes sense. Show that there is actual revenue loss. Chances are the government will take that into consideration and then actively work towards, you know, offsetting it.
As long as we're not at war, which we have been at points, and we have been at like a proxy war at certain other points. I mean, you know, at points where things are relatively all right. I mean, the fact that we have a World Cup right now where the Pakistani team is coming and playing matches in India, thing that perhaps they would, I'm sure some of the players feel that it was a mistake considering the kind of experience they're having right now. And probably the only thing that's sort of, you know, allowing them to suffer through this, what has to be a harrowing experience, is the fact that they're getting paid, you know, enough. Like we said,
right.
The number one religion above all religions is capitalism in our sad world today. But
I will say this, I very much like it.
I don't, but you know,
hey,
that's
at least it doesn't
world.
Discriminate. Money doesn't discriminate.
You know, it does, but you know, anyway, that's a discussion for another time. But
yeah, that's another episode altogether.
I will say that money can buy happiness. It's not, that's something as I don't disagree with, but. So coming back to it, I mean, the fact is that, you know, everybody stands to benefit by sort of having cross-border collaboration, having cross-border, tours and exchanges. And, you know, I think that, you know, and I think that maybe in some sense, even just like, maybe it will to some extent even crush this hate that is, and maybe in a small way, you know, if we have, music has that power, right? It has the power to sort of like break down barriers. And I'm being very idealistic right now, but maybe if somebody actually sees somebody perform and sees that, look, they're exactly just like you.
So I'm optimistic for our generations and the ones after that is because I kind of look at, you know, a lot of my work because my friends and through my colleagues, I work with a lot of like Indian Americans, right? And I've seen the generational change that has happened with each generation and how hard it was for them to be a part of a society, to face discrimination, to feel a certain way about their home country, not accepting it, then accepting their new country, trying to assimilate. But now they've come to a place where both these worlds kind of coexist. And having seen that happen in other parts of the world, I feel optimistic. I do feel that a few generations from now, the trauma will heal. But until then, I just want to watch Atif Aslam, man.
And yeah, and congratulations to these, I'm going to call them kids because they look like kids. The artist formerly known as Uran.
We will see you all next week.